It is Thursday, September 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, preparations are underway in Florida for Hurricane Irma as a huge storm batters the Caribbean. Israeli warplanes strike an alleged Syrian chemical weapons facility near Hama, and a biblical studies professor finds ancient religious sites in Turkey. It's all ahead. As Hurricane Irma, one of the most powerful storms to develop in the Atlantic in a century, churns its way through the Caribbean, it has left a path of devastation and human suffering. One of the hardest-hit countries was the two-island Antigua and Barbuda, southeast of Puerto Rico. The northern island of Barbuda took a direct hit from Irma early Wednesday. Later, Prime Minister Gaston Brown was able to see firsthand the damage caused by Irma by helicopter. He returned to Antigua heartbroken, said ABS-TV News director Garfield Burford, who spoke with International Edition's Victor Beatty.
It was then that he saw for himself the kind of devastation that occurred on Barbuda. He therefore came back to Antigua heartbroken, he said, in his own words, saying that he's never seen anything as bad as this in his life. He said he was on the verge of tears when he realized what was happening. Over 90% of the buildings there were either destroyed or severely damaged. It's almost a wipeout on Barbuda. From the air, the pictures are almost surreal.
What relief efforts may be anticipated in coming days?
The Prime Minister has indicated that his government would mobilize an extraordinarily quick and urgent relief effort, and so water and other supplies, basic necessities, would be taken to Barbuda. He's eventually said, look, there might be a necessity for an evacuation from Barbuda to Antigua of the residents there, especially, according to the Prime Minister, if another storm that is out there, another hurricane, pretty much in the Atlantic now, and which could affect Antigua and Barbuda as early as this weekend. That's Jose. The Prime Minister has indicated that if Jose were to be seen to be causing some impact on Antigua and Barbuda, as did Irma, then it would be absolutely essential that the residents on Barbuda evacuate and come to Antigua. So he's looking at that as an issue. He's saying at this point, it would be important for residents to voluntarily relocate to Antigua. But he says if Jose were to pose a significant threat, as some forecast models are suggesting, then it would be absolutely important and critical and necessary that the residents there evacuate to Antigua.
Well, if you have 90% destruction, isn't housing going to be among the top priorities?
Absolutely it is. And in fact, I asked the Prime Minister where are the residents staying now, because since most of the houses would have been badly compromised or destroyed altogether, he indicated that most of them are huddled in the few buildings that are perhaps habitable. But even those buildings are themselves not ideal, of course, because a lot of them would have also been damaged in the onslaught of Irma. So that's also a significant challenge. The Prime Minister indicated that it's going to take about $150 million EC dollars, Eastern Caribbean dollars, that's the currency we use here, to rebuild the housing stock, the building stock there in Barbuda. By the way, one EC dollar is 2.7 to one U.S. dollar.
Similar reports of widespread destruction came in from St. Martin, partly ruled by France and the Netherlands. Irma was forecast to impact the Dominican Republic and Haiti, the Turks and Caicos Islands, the Bahamas, and Cuba Thursday and Friday before making landfall along the Florida coast by the week's end. Echo Song is a former intern with VOA's Mandarin service. She's now a student at the University of Miami, and she's driving north. She describes what she's seeing on the highway.
Yeah, we were planning to stay in Miami, but I saw on the news that there's a new tropical storm called Jose and another one tropical storm in like Mexico Gulf, I think, is called Katia. So we were planning to get out now. We are on the way heading to the north, and we are planning to like arrive at Atlanta like this evening. The road here, the traffic is very heavy. It's almost double time, like double the normal time to arrive at Atlanta. And like most of people are heading north now, and some of the locals choose to stay, but the oil and the food and the water has all rent out in the supermarket. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. If you're driving, I mean, are you able to get an, you know, get enough gasoline to power your car?
It's difficult to find enough gasoline. Like most of the gas stations are run out the gas, but you can still find some. They are still like a little bit higher than the normal price, but you can still find some if you like keep searching.
That's former VOA intern Echo Song. Well, Hurricane Irma has forced airlines to cancel more than 1,800 flights to and from airports in the Caribbean and Florida. Experts at the FlightAware.com website say that number is expected to rise sharply as the storm approaches Florida, home to Miami Airport, which is one of the busiest in the world. Miami usually sees more than 1,200 flights a day to 150 destinations by 80 airlines. Florida Governor Rick Scott implored the residents of his state to evacuate affected areas.
Based on what we now know, Miami-Dade will have major hurricane impacts with deadly storm surge, and life-threatening winds. We can expect this all along the entire East Coast. The Florida Keys should be prepared to start feeling the effects of the storm as early as tomorrow night. Look at the size of this storm. It's huge. Is wider than our entire state and could cause major and life-threatening impacts on both coast to coast. Regardless of which coast you live on, be prepared to evacuate. Floridians on the West Coast cannot be complacent. Just because models show going along the East Coast, the West Coast will still have hurricane conditions, and these storms can move and change. Remember, Hurricane Andrew is one of the worst storms in the history of Florida. This is much worse and more devastated on its current path.
Scott also said transportation officials agreed to help Florida get additional fuel supplies in.
They have lifted federal regulations to get gas to Florida quickly. All ports still remain open and operating to bring fuel and supplies in. We are laser focused on how we get as much fuel as possible to our ports while they are open.
That's Florida Governor Rick Scott. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. And Andrew, I can just imagine the reaction this hurricane is getting.
And the amazing thing is that the reaction on social media tracks with so much of what we've talked about so far. So as we see these scenes of the destruction coming in from the Caribbean, we also see scenes from people in Florida evacuating. We're seeing scenes on social media with lines of cars on the highway, as we heard from Echo Song, and the photos are just amazing. You know, cars bumper to bumper stretching all along the highway trying to get out of the state of Florida. You're also seeing a lot of instances where people are reporting price gouging on social media, reports of gas prices being increased 4, 5, 6 times more expensive than they usually are, which is illegal. So people are able to report that, and there's been a lot of crackdown on that through that social media reporting. And then we're seeing the airlines trying to do their part to help people get out. A lot of airlines have capped their prices or waived fees for changing reservations so that people can try to get out as quickly and efficiently as possible. And a lot of social media attention on one Delta Airlines flight. It flew into San Juan, Puerto Rico, just as the storm's outer bands were hitting that city. It loaded up with passengers and flew out to New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport between the storm's bands. So as the storm was coming through, it actually flew out in a gap in the storm. People tracking this on social media saying it was an amazing flight to get those people out of San Juan.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The Pope urges peace and understanding in Colombia. South Sudan says U.S. sanctions against it are unfortunate. Pakistan says the U.S. war on terror cannot be won without it. And mass protests take place in Togo for constitutional reform. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of scientists using a worldwide network of telescopes have been scanning the visible skies to look for very bright supernovae. But recently, while looking for the exploding stars, one of the team members, Jose Prieto, a professor at Diego Portales University in Chile, found something else instead, a new comet. The team followed the comet's trajectory for several days. They noticed that it brightened over an initial three-day observation period, but dimmed slightly during a second three-day period. According to the scientists, this sudden increase in brightness may have been due to an ejection of dust and gas by the comet, which temporarily increases the amount of material surrounding a comet's solid nucleus. The team says this newfound comet is now approaching our inner solar system and will continue to do so for several months. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a biblical studies professor finds ancient religious sites in Turkey. Syria says two people were killed when Israeli warplanes struck a military facility near Hama that Western nations allege is linked to Damascus's chemical weapons program. Syria claims to have handed over all of its chemical weapons as part of an internationally brokered deal in 2013. But the UN accuses Damascus of using chemical weapons on a number of times since, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Arab media Thursday showed footage of what appeared to be burning buildings following an Israeli airstrike on an alleged Syrian government chemical weapons plant near the town of Masyaf in the northwest of the country near Hama. Lebanese media reported that the Israeli warplanes violated Lebanese airspace, launching their missiles at the Syrian plant from inside Lebanese territory. A Syrian army statement said the Israeli attack hit the facility near the town of Masyaf, close to the Mediterranean coast and not far from Russia's airbase at Hamaymum in Latakia. The statement claimed that the attack was prompted by recent victories by the Syrian army against the Islamic State group. Syrian Defense Minister Fahad Frej meeting with government military commanders at a government-controlled airbase outside the eastern oasis town of Deir Zor, until recently encircled by Islamic State, lauded the government's recent advances. He says that all patriotic Syrians should be proud of this great victory and of the amazing tenacity of government forces, as well as the resistance of all those citizens in Deir Zor and those in nearby towns controlled by Islamic State terrorists. Qatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that he believes the Israeli attack came after Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu failed to convince Russian President Vladimir Putin or U.S. President Donald Trump to push pro-Iranian forces supporting the Assad government away from Syria's border with Israel. He says that the Iranians have been advancing and that they have just completed an arc from Tehran to the Mediterranean Sea, in addition to advances in their ballistic missile capability. He stresses that the Israeli attack was not far from Russia's main airbase in Syria and that it sent a very strong message to both the Assad regime and Iran, along with Russia as well. Abu Diab argues that Israel's message to all three countries is that it is capable of defending its interests, and he believes that there will be even more Israeli military activity inside Syria in the future. Israel made no official comment on the airstrikes, although a former Israeli intelligence chief praised the attack. Israel has launched a number of attacks on what it claimed were pro-Iranian military convoys or facilities near Damascus over the past several years. Israel also launched an attack destroying an alleged Syrian nuclear facility under construction in 2007. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
U.S. congressional leaders are embracing President Donald Trump's challenge to pass legislation addressing the legal status of nearly 800,000 undocumented immigrants who were brought to the United States as children. VOA's Michael Bowman reports Trump rescinded an executive order that allowed the youths to work and study without fear of deportation and gave Congress 6 months to enact a permanent solution to their plight.
Once protected by the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, Akiko now feels exposed. She arrived in America from the Philippines at age 10 and studied to be a nurse.
Deportation's always a fear, but there's also the fear of not being able to pay for your rent or pay for your food.
The Trump administration says ending DACA allows Congress to replace a legally suspect executive order with something far more durable, a federal law.
I have a love for these people, and hopefully now Congress will be able to help them and do it properly.
Reaction came swiftly on Capitol Hill.
The clock is ticking. We are now in a countdown toward deportation for 780,000 protected by DACA today. We need to pass in this month of September a DREAM Act, a permanent law in this country that says that these young people will have their chance to become part of America's future.
70% of Americans at least want to give these kids a second chance and a good life in our country. You should want them to stay. They're great kids. They're working. They're productive.
Durbin and Graham are backing the DREAM Act, which would allow DACA beneficiaries who meet work or educational requirements to remain in the United States and eventually apply for citizenship. Democrats are demanding prompt votes.
We're ready to pass it. I am confident that if put on the floor, it will garner overwhelming support from both sides of the aisle.
But powerful Republicans say they will only consider the DREAM Act if U.S. border security is strengthened.
And the larger problem is that we do not have control of our borders. We want to make sure that we fix this issue for these kids, for these young people, and address the root cause of the problem so we don't have the same thing 10 years from now.
Some Democrats say they are open to tougher enforcement short of the U.S.-Mexico border wall favored by the president. But they fear negotiations will drag on and delay congressional action, putting people like Akiko at risk.
We should all be able to dream together and to work hard to where we want to go.
President Trump tweeted that if Congress fails to act, he, in his words, will revisit the issue. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Like the film character Indiana Jones, Mark Fairchild is a professor at a university in Indiana. He travels to far-off places in search of biblical antiquities and doesn't like snakes. That's why his students call him Indiana Mark. It's also one of the reasons he's the focus of a new documentary. Erica Celeste reports from Huntington, Indiana.
When Huntington University student Matt Whitney went on his first trip to Turkey with Mark Fairchild, he couldn't believe a film hadn't already been made about the professor of biblical studies and religion.
Well, this guy, like I said, is in his 60s and is climbing giant mountains all day long and discovering lost cities out in the middle of the wilderness.
Whitney and his friend Logan Bush, who also went on the trip, graduated in 2015 and became filmmakers. This past May, they completed filming a documentary about Fairchild and Turkey.
We're using this trip that we take along St. Paul's missionary route as a backdrop and a story to bring us along on Dr. Fairchild's day-to-day life. You're going to be seeing this amazing archaeologist who's done all these amazing things, but you'll also be learning all about Turkey and all about its history and all about the significance of it at the same time.
Mark Fairchild didn't start out to be an archaeologist. As a biblical historian, he was fascinated that most of the New Testament takes place in Turkey. 20 years ago, he made a side trip to the country. He was so impressed with the antiquities that he became a self-taught archaeologist and began spending all his free time there. By finding Hellenistic and Jewish sites, he's often able to learn more about early Christianity. On one of his trips in 2012, he uncovered the oldest synagogue in the world.
So as I'm climbing, there are several buildings that I'm passing. I look off onto my left-hand side, and there I see what appears to be a menorah.
Fairchild has visited more than 350 sites in Turkey. He often makes discoveries by visiting the countryside and talking with locals. While they're often aware of the many ruins, they seldom know what they are or have visited themselves. That's partly because they're so remote and overgrown, and partly because the country sees its history as beginning with Islam. Fairchild hopes his work, as well as this film, gives Westerners not only an appreciation of the past, but a better understanding of Turkey's role in the modern world.
If we're ever going to resolve this problem of terrorism, Turkey, in my belief, has to be a player. Turkey is 99% Muslim, but they are very secular. It is the most moderate Muslim nation in the world. They have good relations with most Western countries. They're a part of NATO. They want more.
The filmmakers hope to have their feature-length documentary, tentatively titled The Last Apostle, Journeys in the Holy Land, ready for release by the end of September. It will then make the rounds at several film festivals and be available on the Internet. For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste in Huntington, Indiana.
And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Between 1964 and 1973, in an effort to prevent the movement of supplies, armaments, and North Vietnamese fighters across neighboring territories and into Vietnam, the U.S. Air Force dropped over 270 million cluster bombs on Vietnam's western neighbor, Laos. As a result, Laos has the grim distinction of being per capita the world's most bombed country. Today, most of the country's 17 provinces remain contaminated with unexploded ordnance, or UXO, wrote U.S. Air Force Major General Michael Rothstein, who recently served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Plans, Programs, and Operations in the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs. Because many of the bombs that were dropped did not explode immediately as intended, UXO has killed or injured thousands of Laotians. While landmines were also laid in Laos during the Indochina Wars of the 1960s and 1970s, UXO account for the bulk of explosive hazard contamination. Landmines and unexploded munitions render millions of hectares of land unusable, preventing farmers from tending their fields. They make travel dangerous because explosives lie hidden in pepper fields, meadows, and forests, and a misstep could be deadly. Nonetheless, as time goes by, population growth in Laos has increased demands to put UXO-contaminated land into productive use, which of course means an increased risk of injuries and deaths. The government is committed to removing the UXO threat, but progress has been slow. One of the reasons is that while many local surveys have been conducted over the years, Laos has lacked a comprehensive national survey of UXO contamination. That is why today, in addition to funding mine clearance in Laos, the United States is partnering with Laos on just such a survey. This new project will allow us to better identify areas of the country with the greatest concentrations of UXO risk, improving the effectiveness of clearance operations, wrote General Michael Rothstein. Years of work remain ahead, but clearly this work is more important than ever. Not only does it address a wartime legacy, but it is also a smart investment in a brighter future for Laos, its neighbors, and ultimately for U.S. diplomatic and security partnerships in the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email,
visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.